Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
Looking for something scary, morbid, frighteningly insane?
Get out!
Every form of horror, from ghosts, cryptids, and curses, to deals with the devil, giant insects, and more. Join us at Haunted Tales, our weekly horror anthology series. And let me tell you a story.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again on Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy for some cocktails and some fun stories. Sometimes fun, sometimes not so fun.
Oh, well, it's always fun to hang out with you guys, so
that's true.
We got
that's
that going true. For us.
Yeah. So, Declan, what story do you have for us today?
Today, I'm going to be talking about Karen Silkwood.
Karen Silkwood. Okay. And I know that that's got to be a good bizarre one because I am doing the brutal story today.
It's pretty interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
Cool. I know there was a movie a long time ago that was Silkwood. Is it, I wonder if it's the same story, because it's a, I think the movie Silkwood was a like dramatization of real events. So I wonder if it was thing, but I don't know because I never really looked into it.
There is a movie called Silkwood, but I don't know. It's not really giving me much information about it, so I'm not sure if it's...
Okay. About her life or anything?
Oh, no. The drama is based on the true story of Karen Silkwood. Yeah.
There you go. Okay. I don't know about it. Well, now you know.
It's pretty interesting. I'm going to have to watch this movie after this.
Cool. It's an older movie.
Yeah, it looks like it's...
I'm going to say the 70s or 80s. Okay. Cool.
Anyways, what is your story today, Mom?
My story is a brutal crime out of Idaho that has gotten some resolution, and that's the Moscow murders.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to be talking about the Idaho guy.
Yeah.
The
Moscow, Idaho.
The school shooter guy?
No.
Oh.
Okay. No.
Because he's in trial right now, I want to say.
Wasn't a shooter.
Been sentenced? I don't know. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's why I did it now, because there's resolution to the case. So we'll get to hear all about that. To go with this story, I brought the PhD cocktail because our perpetrator was studying to get his PhD when he committed the crime that he has been sentenced for. So that's why I chose the drink. The drink is made up of 3/4 ounce of vodka, 3/4 ounce of gin, 1/2 ounce of triple sec, and 1/2 ounce of Rose's lime juice. The steps are to add.
This is going
to
be fucking gross.
You think? I think it's going to be tasty.
I don't have to.
You're going to add all the ingredients to a shaker with ice, shake and strain into a cocktail glass. You think it's going to be bad. I don't think it's going to be great. I don't think it's going to be one of my favorites, but I think it'll be tasty. Because I like all of those individual things. Mm. So when you add them together, this should be decent.
The rose's lime juice is just funky to me.
It is a little bit on the weird side.
It's like a...
But maybe the gin and vodka will cover it.
I was looking at the ingredients. Fakey. Lime is like the seventh ingredient in the rose's lime juice.
Rose's lime juice.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Yeah. Let's check it out. I don't know why, but Rose's lime juice tastes like coconut to me.
That drink is not good.
You're right. It's not good.
It tastes like a lime version of Pine Sol.
It's not good. It's not good. I was wrong. I like all those things together and or separate, but putting them together does not make them good.
No, oh, that was
that's rough. It's ready. Bitter.
Yeah, I think it's gin. What kind of gin did you use?
Beefeater.
I just use New Amsterdam.
It's the gin that I use for all our gin drinks because I've got a handle of it because we make gin drinks so often. So it's not anything that I would dislike. I've liked our other gin drinks. But this combo, not a fan.
It's not doing it for me.
Maybe if you did lime juice and simple as two separate things instead of a sweetened lime juice. But the sweetened lime juice has a funk to it.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Not a fan.
That Rose's. The only good product from Rose's is grenadine.
I agree. Let's jump into our story about Moscow, Idaho. It is a small rural city near the border of Idaho and Washington. It is the home of University of Idaho. And in the fall of 2022, it made worldwide headlines for a quadruple murder.
So this is Brian, what's his name?
Koberger.
Koberger.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Brian Koberger.
For some reason I thought it was a school shooting.
It was not a shooting, it was a stabbing.
Oh, he took the British side of the tragedy.
He did. The victims were all students at the university. Ethan Chapin was a sophomore majoring in recreation, sport, and tourism management. He was dating one of the other victims, Zanna Kernodle. Zanna was a junior at the university with a major in marketing. A third victim was Kaylee Gonsalves. She was a senior who was majoring in general studies. The fourth victim was Madison Mogan, who was also a senior, and she went by the name Maddie. Her study of focus was marketing. The three young ladies had all been roommates in the house, but Kaylee had recently moved out and returned to visit her friends. On the night of the murders, Kaylee and Maddie were staying together in Maddie's room. Ethan didn't live in the home. He was just spending the night with his girlfriend, Zanna. The couple were in her room. Those weren't the only tenants in the house that night. There were also two other roommates in the home. One of them reported that she heard a few sounds of a disturbance in the early morning hours a little after 4 a.m. Although she opened her bedroom door a couple of times and looked out, she didn't initially see anything. She could hear someone crying and heard an unknown male saying things like, "We're okay," and that he would help. She didn't know who this guy was. She didn't recognize the voice. So it's not like... I would assume that she would probably recognize Ethan's voice because, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends hang out together with your roommates. So, yeah. I mean, even though he didn't live there, I would assume that he was well known to the other roommate. She didn't recognize the voice.
Yeah.
But she did hear a man saying he would help. A few minutes later, she opened her door again and this time saw an unknown male wearing a mask and all black clothing. The man walked past her and exited the house. He did not approach her. He did not touch her. He didn't say anything. He just left.
Weird.
Which is creepy in and of itself. But then when you find out what happened, it's even more disturbing.
Am I not good enough to be stabbed?
Right. For some reason, the surviving roommates didn't call 911 until about 7 hours later. So they hear a disturbance. They see a strange person walk through their house. They don't know anybody's dead. They don't know anything had happened to anybody else. They just go to bed. She went to bed.
Did they say how many roommates were in the house?
There were, well, there were three actual, wait, yeah, there were three roommates. One had recently moved out, and then Zana's boyfriend who didn't live there. And then there were two surviving.
Okay. So
there were four people killed. Two actually were currently tenants at the house. One had recently moved out. And then the two survivors.
When you have a bunch of roommates in college, people come in and out that you don't know. It's just their friends
for
from
sure.
class to come over to study for or whatever. Sure. It's just, I hope this isn't a serial killer in my house right now. I hope they're going to see someone who lives here.
That is a very valid point. But if you had heard a disturbance and then you saw a masked person leave your house, I don't know. You're probably right. It was probably like, whatever. It's just one more person walking through my house. Maybe, you know, it was November.
Green mask or a COVID mask? Because that was.
It was just a mask.
Time that you were allowed to. No one would look at you weird if you're wearing a COVID mask. So
I don't think it was. I mean, this was 2022. So it definitely could have been a COVID mask, but it wasn't described as like a COVID mask or anything. It was just that.
Okay. Just a mask.
His face was covered. Okay. Yeah. Not like a scary Halloween mask, but just his face was covered. So maybe like a balaclava or something like that. I didn't really look too far into it.
It'd be fitting if he was wearing an old school hockey mask.
For sure. Stabbing people. That would definitely raise some eyebrows from me, for sure.
Yeah.
Either way, no one called 911 until the next morning. Well, later. I mean, this all happened at like between 4 and 4:30 in the morning. And they didn't call until almost noon.
Jesus.
A fair amount of time had passed. Police responded to the home to discover the four homicide victims and a very bloody scene. All of the victims had been stabbed numerous times. None of them had been restrained or gagged, and all of them were in bed. Sleeping people, relaxed people.
You'd like to die in your sleep, but not by stabbing.
No, I do not want to be
stabbed. I think that's going to wake you from your slumber.
For sure. Absolutely. Police began investigating and made assurances to the public that there was not a public safety issue. Of course, the major question was how police could make a statement like that when at the time they didn't have a suspect. They had no motive. They had no idea who had done it or why or anything. Yet they are on the news saying this is not a public safety issue. Everyone is safe.
How do you know?
Exactly. And I remember when this happened going, how do they know that when they don't have a suspect? Unless they have a suspect and they're not telling anybody, which I totally get. That's fine. But they blatantly said, we don't have a suspect, but there's not a public safety issue. That seems sketchy to me, but whatever. 3 days later, the police chief walked back that statement and said they couldn't say for certain that there was not a public danger. So maybe they kind of were like, okay, we don't really know if there is or is not, but whatever. Multiple police agencies were involved in the investigation. Security camera footage from the area surrounding the home and tips were requested from the public. And the tips started flooding in. A month later, investigators reported receiving over 15,000 tips.
Jesus.
Which is a lot to sift through. Yeah. Security camera footage of the area gave police some interesting information. They identified a Hyundai Elantra driving past the home multiple times in the hours leading up to the murders. Soon they started reviewing vehicle registrations for that specific type of vehicle, and they identified one that belonged to a student from Pullman, Washington, which is about 10 miles away from Moscow, which I didn't know when I heard that, you know, they were looking. I didn't realize that the school this guy went to was just 10 miles away from where the murders happened, even though they're in different states. They both both colleges are basically on the border of their respective states. So really, really close. Just 10 miles.
That's weird.
The vehicle was the same make and model as the one seen in this camera, in the security camera footage. The owner of the vehicle was Brian Koberger. As I said, he was a student at the nearby college. He had just started working on his PhD in criminology. So he was studying crime stuff. He was also working as a teaching assistant, but received multiple complaints about his demeanor towards women. His conduct came to the attention of his superiors, and a couple of weeks before the murders, the concerns were addressed. They pulled him aside, and they were like, hey, you're being whatever to women. You need to stop it. Koberger was from Pennsylvania, and after the fall term finished in December, he drove home for the holidays. In the meantime, during the investigation, police were able to get DNA samples from the scene. Using familial DNA, they were able to get a partial match to a person related to Koberger. Which, of course, they're like, okay, we need to watch him more closely. Which they proceeded to do at his home in Pennsylvania, at his family's home. They observed him thoroughly cleaning his car inside, outside, making it nice and clean. And they also noticed some strange behaviors. He was seen multiple times wearing surgical gloves to process trash and then deposit that trash in the neighbor's trash cans outside of their home. So he's bagging stuff up. He's wearing gloves. He's bagging stuff up and then putting it in other people's trash cans.
Maybe his house is just really dirty.
Well, I did see that he was diagnosed with OCD at some point. But I think it's beyond that. I think he was, you know, trying
some
to
other underlying illnesses
cover some
there.
Shit. Yes. Investigators were able to obtain a DNA sample from the trash and matched it to the DNA sample found at the murder scene. On December 30th, 2022, Koberger was arrested for the murders. Within a few days, he was extradited from Pennsylvania back to Idaho. Koberger's phone records pinged the cell tower near the victim's home about 5 hours after the murder occurred, but before the police had been called to the home. Meaning, he drove by that house when nobody else knew that a murder, that any murders had occurred. He was driving past that house. No reason to be there.
I understand now that we know he's a murderer, but just because someone's driving past the house doesn't make them guilty, I feel.
True, true.
But
his phone also showed
for concern.
Yes. His phone records also showed that for several months leading up to the murders, his phone registered at that cell tower near the murder scene. For months. He had been he had been driving by this house. There, like, he didn't know the people that lived in that house. To my knowledge, there was no explanation as to why he would have been anywhere near there. Remember, he goes to school 10 miles away in another state. Granted, 10 miles is nothing. I mean, I drive 75 miles to get lunch, you know. I could run, but I wouldn't. 6 months after the murders, Koberger was indicted for 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of felony burglary. The trial was tentatively scheduled to begin August 2025, but in late June 2025, before the trial could start, Koberger took a plea deal to avoid the death penalty, which in the state of Idaho could have been, they recently added a method. What method do you think they added to the death penalty? We recently talked about it.
Firing squad.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. Firing squad was an option. And I was surprised by that. The reason it was added back in or was added as an option, apparently it's getting difficult for prisons to get a hold of the drugs associated with lethal injection. So they're trying to figure out other options. And so they put firing squad back on list of options.
Give them a key bump of fentanyl. That'll fucking kill somebody.
There's that. Yeah. The plea deal also stipulated that Koberger waived his right to any further appeals. So basically he was like, all right, I did it. And I'll forever
his term
say
is
that
his
I
term.
Did it. Yep. Okay. During his sentencing, which just happened this week, he was asked if he wanted to make a statement, which he declined to do. He was like, no, I'm not talking. Koberger was sentenced to 4 consecutive life terms for the murders and will remain in prison until his natural death.
Sweet.
He is there forever. And good. Ever. Yes. 4 consecutive life terms, no possibility of parole. I believe he also was sentenced to 10 years for the burglary as well. Just to be like, if 4 life terms wasn't enough, we're tacking on 10.
Nice.
I don't believe he has ever, at this point, he hasn't commented about why or what happened or any details. This is still pretty new, so...
Yeah,
he was just sentenced like a few days ago.
Yeah.
I would be curious if in the future he does comment. There was a gag order placed on all of like media coverage and stuff, and I believe that they are working at lifting that. I don't know if he made any statements about... Usually they have to make some kind of statement of... this is how I did it kind of thing, but I didn't read anything about that. And like I said, he declined to speak at his sentencing hearing, which from what I was reading, pissed off the family members of the victims, rightfully so.
I mean, if you,
but
kill
I wouldn't
want to
hear from
you
him.
Know you did it. What? And you're not sorry. Why would you?
What's
say
there
anything?
To say about it?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
it's not going to change anything.
Yeah. Yep, I definitely killed him, but okay, we know that because you're guilty. Like,
right.
It kind of seems redundant to me.
True, true.
Okay, let's talk about Karen Silkwood.
Okay.
Karen Silkwood was born 1946 to parents Merle and Bill Silkwood in Longview, Texas, but was raised in Nederland, Texas, along with her sisters Rosemary and Linda. Throughout her school career, she was a straight-A student and a member of the National Honor Society, showing a particular interest in chemistry. In 1964, she enrolled at Lamar State College of Technology on a scholarship from the Business and Professional Women's Club. Only a year later, she dropped out and married William Meadows, who worked on oil pipelines. After 7 years of marriage, she divorced William due to his exorbitant spending and an affair.
Oh, that's not nice.
After the divorce, she moved to Oklahoma City, where she worked as a clerk at a hospital. Later that year, she was hired as a metallography laboratory technician at the Kerr-McGee Corporation at their Cimarron River plutonium production plant, where she studied the physical structure and components of metals.
Interesting.
Shortly after this, she joined the OCA, or the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union. In November that year, she participated in a strike due to poor working conditions. However, Kerr-McGee hired locals to cross the picket line. In August of 1974, she was assigned to the OCA Bargaining Committee. Her main job included investigating health and safety regulations and standards. This is when she realized that the Cimarron River plant violated numerous health regulations, such as exposure to contaminants, faulty respiratory equipment, and improper storage of certain dangerous chemicals, and missing plutonium from storage.
Uh-oh.
That's not good. I think that's what they used to make nukes. So they need that. Even if they didn't, it's highly, highly toxic. Radioactive materials, not good for you.
Not good for anybody.
On September 26, 1974, she and two other committee members sat in front of some members of DC and voiced their concerns about the plutonium plant. This resulted in nuclear consultants to come in and speak to the workers about how dangerous the chemicals are that they're working with. This ultimately resulted in OCA running a whistleblowing campaign against the plant, where they claimed that the plant had manufactured faulty fuel rods, falsified product inspection records, and risked employee safety.
Oh.
Later that day, Karen testified to the Atomic Energy Commission that she had been personally contaminated by radioactive material during the short period of time that she worked at the facility.
Oh, no.
In early November, Karen performed a routine self-check that showed almost 400 times the legal limit for plutonium contamination. I didn't realize there was a legal limit.
Wow. She's
blowing too high to drive, but the following morning she tested positive for plutonium contamination despite only checking paperwork and doing menial office tasks.
Seriously?
The next day she was tested again, and it was found that she was extremely contaminated. Even the breath she was breathing out was contaminated with plutonium.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect that just doing paperwork.
Yeah, so that means there's some contamination happening at the Kerr-McGee plutonium plant.
Little bit.
So she was followed home and had her home tested, and they found she had infected many items in her home. So her boyfriend and their roommate were sent to Los Alamos National Laboratory to be tested and fully decontaminated.
How do you suspect? Are you going to tell us how they decontaminate people?
No, I didn't look that up. I'm sure. I'm sure
I would be
like
curious.
I think they have pills for like radiation poisoning and stuff like that. So it's probably something like that.
I hope it's easy and a pill.
So it was suspected that she was intentionally poisoned by Kerr-McGee Group because the type of plutonium she was infected with was in another part of the building where she wouldn't have gone to. I didn't realize there was different types of plutonium, but
I did not know that either, and how they could figure that out.
Well, there's isotopes and
Oh, that's true. Like that. They could probably test.
Like what? I don't know. Radioactive stuff is confusing to me, but. By the end of the month, Karen believes she had enough evidence to shut down the plant, so she contacted David Burnham from the New York Times. They agreed to meet up and discuss this issue at a cafe nearby. At 5:30 on November 13th, 1974, Karen was seen presenting at an OCAW union meeting. She was seen with a binder and a notebook that was not used during the presentation. So she was had a binder and notebook to bring to the New York Times guy. After the union meeting.
Okay. Okay. I have a feeling this is taking a bad turn.
It is. Yeah. So at the presentation, she spoke with a work colleague and voiced her concerns about the plutonium contamination, but the coworker reassured her that she had all the documents necessary to provide to New York Times to shut down the Kerr-McGee plant. At 7:10, Karen left the meeting in her car to go meet up with the New York Times reporters. By 7:40, police arrived to the scene of a horrific car accident. Sorry about that. I need to make sure my phone is off. Karen's car had been run off the road. She drove on the grass for a bit before she hit a concrete culvert. When police arrived, they found Karen's body had been impaled by the steering wheel and was stuck to the ceiling of her Honda Civic. She was pronounced dead on the scene, only 7 miles from the cafe she was supposed to meet the reporters at.
I don't like it.
Police were unable to find the reports she was bringing to her New York Times.
Of course.
They found quaaludes and two joints in her car and determined that she had fallen asleep while driving.
Bullshit.
The OCAW hired their own investigator who determined that Karen was awake during the crash because her steering wheel was bent in such a way to suggest that she was fighting the steering wheel as hard as she could to get the car back on the road. He also pointed out that the car was in the left culvert rather than the right and had some damage to the driver's side rear quarter panel that wouldn't be present in a front end collision. And
so like tiny pit maneuver?
Paint chips. Yep. Looked like she was pit maneuvered to the left side of the road.
Oof.
Despite her passing, her father Bill filed a complaint with the Kerr-McGee plant for gross negligence. During the trial, some suspicions began brewing. Several other people had been unofficially threatened by the Kerr-McGee group. Multiple people had suffered the same treatment as Karen but lived, so they were run off the road by just a random car.
Really?
One healthy police officer who was set to give a deposition against them died of a heart attack despite no autopsy. A Kerr-McGee manager had an attempted assassination because they deemed it that he knew too much. And Bill Taylor, who was investigating for the Silkwood family, also had an assassination attempt on his life. So the results of the lawsuit...
That's a lot of coincidences.
Yeah, a lot of people that had assassination attempts. The results of the lawsuit determined that Kerr-McGee was to pay $505,000 or $2.8 million today in damages to the Silkwood and $10 million in punitive damage. However, it was reversed and the company only had to pay $5,000 to the family and no punitive damages. They were retried in 1986 and the Kerr-McGee group settled outside of court for $1.3 million or about $4 million today.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't like that. That was yucky.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people weird. That bad stuff happened to. You can't tell me that was all... Just coincidence.
I'm really excited to watch the movie now. I didn't realize there was a movie about this. I would have watched that beforehand. But.
I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I think I might have seen a few clips of the movie over the years, but I don't think I've ever seen it. So I didn't know like all of the details, and I didn't know she died.
Yeah. It's got Meryl Streep, Kurt Russell, and Cher in it, so it's probably pretty good.
I was thinking that she died of like cancer or something. I didn't know they killed her. Allegedly. Yeah.
Somebody killed her, that's for sure.
Yes. Wow. I don't like it.
Yeah. Super weird.
Do you have a chaser?
Oh,
I asked first. Jinx.
Okay. My chaser is a new game that came out called Ready or Not. So you play as like a SWAT officer, but it's not like other video games. It's like extremely realistic. Like it's more of a simulation. So you have all these like missions. Like one of the missions, you bust a child porn ring, and another one there's like they have the Pulse nightclub shooting as one of the maps, and you have to go and take out the active shooter, but they left something in that was from the like real life, where when cops were going in, they could just hear the cell phones ringing of all the people that died and like their family trying to contact them, and they left that in the game, and it's so fucking weird.
That's
like, it's
disturbing.
Makes my skin crawl to play this game, but it's really fun.
That's disturbing.
Yeah,
that's a downer of a chaser, man.
It's a really fun game. I recommend people play it, but it's super super realistic.
Okay, to put a more positive spin on it, do you think that it offers some realism for people who aren't familiar with what law enforcement has to deal with, and maybe it would give them a better perspective of like, this is their real life and the shit that they have to deal with? Because I think that's important. I think more people need to understand what law enforcement has to go through on a daily basis.
Yeah, and it's so realistic that you could kind of use it as like a CQB training thing, like teaching you the fundamentals, because like you have to clear a room. You die in like one or two shots, so you have to. It's
all
like,
right, then I'll take that as a positive.
It's, yeah, and I feel like I'm kind of getting PTSD from playing it some certain missions, but it's
okay,
like,
then.
Yeah. I could see
you
why
need
cops
to take
get,
a break from it.
It's so fun.
I don't want you having PTSD from playing a video game.
It's a million times more fun when you play with your friends because you're just fucking around. But when you play by yourself, you have to actually like pay attention and do the right thing. You get points if you like arrest all the bad guys rather than just killing them. So it's pretty interesting.
Okay. All right. Well,
what's your chaser?
Funny enough, my chaser is a TV show, but it's called Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Sounds
which we both have cop related chasers. Yeah. The show is set in this small little town where the chief of police he's the chief of police, and he hires his daughter and his son to be the detectives.
Hmm.
So there's a play on like the sibling rivalry, but they're still kind of close. And
is it like a comedy show or like a sitcom type deal?
Yeah, it's kind of probably more comedy than it is drama. And some of the cases that they have to solve are pretty funny, and there's a old murder that they have to solve throughout multiple episodes, and it's just a really good show. I recommend it. We binged it in just a couple of days. It's a pretty quick watch.
Hmm.
And the acting
just one
is
season?
Good. And it just one season. It's like brand new, I believe.
Okay.
We found it on Prime. Nice. I think it's a CW show, but Prime has it, so if you don't have Prime, but you have CW, I think you can find it on there. I don't know how that works.
CW.
It's one of the stations. I think like there's Fox and different, whatever. Paramount. Hmm. Wow. It was on Prime, but it had CW listed on the recall of it. It's a good little funny show, and it's cute.
To not too serious. You said it was on Prime?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that wraps us up for today. I don't have any more story. I don't.
That drink is gross.
You drank more of that drink?
Yeah. I'm not going to waste it. That's alcohol abuse.
I'm going to waste it. You put me under arrest for alcohol abuse. It's fine. It's going down the drain. That is a drain drink for sure. It's
better after you let the big ass ice cube in there melt and it's all watered down.
I think you're right that Rose's lime juice is just
nasty. I also don't like triple sec either. It gives me like sweetener sensation.
It does. I don't typically mind it in cocktails, but this overall, just not a good one.
Like when I make margaritas, I just do tequila, lime juice, and simple syrup. I don't think that's the best way. Margarita anymore, but
no, I think there's like purists of it. That's more of like the purest version of a margarita.
I just can't do triple sec. It's not my favorite.
No, lots of people feel that same way.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for checking in this week. Love you, Mom.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.